100 days, no signs of Nancy Guthrie, apparently no leads, no suspects. Do you believe she will still be found, that this case will be solved? I do. What do the best guests think? We'll find out on the flip side.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. Tonight, a milestone that no one wanted to reach, or I don't think ever thought we would reach. And it has now been 100 days since Nancy Guthrie went missing from her home in the Catalina foothills. You've got to go back to January 31st. She's got a dinner over at her sister Annie's house. She takes an Uber over there. She's dropped back off, reportedly, by Annie's husband, Tommaso. And then details become sketchy. I mean, there is a timeline with the Nest camera that we all know a lot about. We will revisit that timeline. But I don't think most people thought we would go basically a third of a year, 100 days, without any sightings of Nancy Guthrie, without this case being solved. And it is arguably now the most infamous missing persons case, at least, you know, one of the top three or four that this nation has seen. Here to help break it down, the godfather of true crime, here he is from Las Vegas, Nevada, Phil Ramos, retired homicide detective, three-time officer of the year, and all-around great guy. Next up, we've got Lieutenant Bob Krieger with that high rank, also a SWAT commander. Part of his email may or may not be sniper, may or may not have the word sniper in it, and he's got that guitar over his shoulder. He is coming to us from Tucson, Arizona, where I hear it's nice and cool today, as it is every summer. And last but not least, another retired homicide detective with more than 30 years inside the Seattle Police Department, 22 years in homicide. You're not going to get a more experienced panel than this 100 days in. Now, for full disclosure, we did invite both Sergeant Aaron Cross, who is currently active in Tucson. He was unable to come on, as was retired homicide detective Kurt Dabb. Kurt has a virus, and Aaron, he's going to do it another time because I had promised that. So I just want to put that out there for full disclosure. But to the godfather of true crime, Phil Ramos, first off, we talked, you know, 5 days ago. Now it is 100 days, Phil. Do you have a sense that we are moving further away from resolution, or as, and we'll talk about this later, or as Sheriff Chris Nano says, he seems to think we're moving closer to resolution. Are we moving closer or further away, Phil?
Yeah, I think they're moving closer simply because there's been no really verifiable updates that they've wanted to give out. And I think that's important because it would have been relegated to a much smaller task force by now if they didn't have stuff still going on. Since there's stuff still going on, I think that they're getting a little bit closer, not much, but it's the clues have definitely stopped coming in. So this is going to be a tough one, man. Like you said, I never would have thought when we talked about this 100 days ago that we'd be at this point without some sort of resolution. But here we are, and that's the nature of the beast. I mean, we get these cases much more often than people think.
Yeah, Bob, for sheriff, that might be a reality one day. There's a move underway, a bipartisan move to recall Sheriff Chris Nanos. And we'll talk to Bob about this a little further down the road during tonight's show. But, I mean, Bob, the obvious question, we're at day 100. You know, your wheelhouse is as a SWAT commander, yeah. But, you know, tons of guys who are leading investigations, and that easily could have been your role. But I mean, you have a really good sense of the department. What is happening psychologically, you think, with the department at the 100 day mark in Tucson?
I said it a few weeks ago. I think it's just an arbitrary day for them. Granted, you know, like you said, we're nearing a third of a year, so it is a long and ongoing case. As long as they still have tangible leads to follow up on, they're going to be working hard. They're going to be doing what they can do as much as they can, doing their best to get the resolution that they need. But like Phil said, it happens. You know, I know each and every one of them would love to have it solved tonight or tomorrow. Because that's what we do as cops. We want that closure. I think with yesterday being Mother's Day too, probably added a little bit, probably a lot to the investigators thinking about it, because, you know, this is as close to the investigation I get. And I thought about it a lot yesterday. It was just one of those things that I didn't necessarily expect to pop in my mind. And it did, because, you know, we've talked about it a lot on this show and I've talked about it a lot of other places. And you just always think about the family. And that's what those folks, whether it's day 100, 200, 5,000, they're going to be doing their best to get it solved.
Yeah. Robin's dogs here, watching with her dachshunds. Gotta love that. We are a best guest, best pets show, known for our love of all things for animals, less love for two-legged humans, but, you know, comes with the territory. But Cloy, to you, you know, Bob just said it's sort of an arbitrary day, you know, in their minds, but I'm sure you have solved most of your cases. I know you, Cloyd, fairly quickly, but the ones that don't get solved quickly and you hit a 100-day mark, what is it like for you? You've been there, I'm sure, Cloyd.
Yeah, I have. And you know, Phil's right. This happens and we don't know what's going on. We don't have the inside story with the guys that are actually doing the investigation. They could have some very active leads going on. We don't know about it. And well, they suddenly say, oh, we found her or we made an arrest or something like that. I don't know. But I am also confident that it will be solved at some point. Probably, unfortunately, they'll find her remains somewhere. And that'll be it.
And there was fear of that because they did find human remains the other day. And I think everyone was sort of on bated breath. And it turned out that they were, quote unquote, archaeological.
Right. I've had that happen to me, too.
Really?
Yeah. They find a skull. And they get down there and the anthropologist says, well, this skull's been here about 250 years.
Cloyd, how common is that, man?
It's not real common, but it does happen, you know.
Wow.
People, you know, especially the indigenous people in this area lived around and they died. And, you know, this is the one I'm talking about. This guy was working in his garden. He was shoveling out a little rock and he pulled it up and it was a human skull. It had been there for a long time. Yeah. That does happen, though.
And I think that's the case with what we're seeing. Scotch's mom here says, I can't believe it's been 100 days. Olive Green. What is with the news that Savannah is going to be hosting a new game show? Thoughts? Is this real? This is real. This is actually the most recent news, and I'm glad you brought it up, Olive Green, who comes to us from the Jersey Channel Islands, just a little different than my Jersey. This is apparently true. And Phil Ramos, to you, you know, Savannah said that on Mother's Day, and we'll take a look at this too in a second, that she, you know, they're never going to stop looking for their mother and that they're basically going to protest by living their lives. And now they announced that she is going to be hosting a new NBC show related to the puzzle Wordle, which I thought, you know, basically went away after it was super popular for like 3 weeks about 5 years ago. But apparently Wordle is now becoming a game show, and Savannah Guthrie is going to host it. A bit of an FU to whoever did this, saying, yeah, I'm going on with my life. I'm taking new jobs, but she's still hurting underneath, Phil. How do you reconcile that? What is the bigger point she's trying to make here?
I think this is her way of moving on, moving forward, you know, a genesis for the family so that they can get this behind them and they're not living, eating, dreaming this every night and every morning. You know, it takes her mind off of, obviously, she's not going to be coming home alive. And obviously, this is going to take a long time. And this just could be her way of dealing with a horrible, horrible situation and trying to move on to find some level of comfort in her soul and in her mind.
Bob Krieger, one of the people that we actually had not really heard from at all was Savannah's husband. Yet on Mother's Day, he did post this from Mike Feldman. And it says here, to the strongest person I know, surrounding you with love on Mother's Day, then my friend Susan Hendricks, who used to be a CNN anchor and has a true crime podcast, she's commenting right below. But what's that tell you, Bob? That, I mean, for the first time really that I can think of publicly, unless you guys know differently, the her husband is now, you know, kind of getting in the mix. And there, it's a show of, to use an expression you guys would use, a show of force, a show of strength. Is that what they're doing here? The family coming together, Lieutenant Bob?
I think so, absolutely. Like you said, haven't heard much, if anything, from him since this all started. He's just been quietly doing his job behind the scenes like he should, being there for his wife, for his kids, for his in-laws, all of those things. You know, everyone on this panel has seen it. You know, usually there's just that pillar in a family, and that's probably what he's been doing, just kind of keeping them together, keeping them focused, doing the little things, helping them when they need to help. And I think yesterday was probably a real good time for that. Hey, I'm here. I love you. I love all of you, to the family. And, you know, especially with the announcement of Savannah doing the new game show, we are not going to be completely defeated by this. We're going to fight back. We're going to push back. And it's what has to be done. Tragedy strikes everybody. You know, there's no way to get around, no matter what you do, your socioeconomic status, how much money you have, how much money you don't have. And to have someone like that in the family, it matters. And I think that's what's been probably going on behind the scenes with him.
Cloyd, you know, you have the unenviable job, or did when you were working, to notify families. But you see here, at the end of this comment from Gia and TJ's mom, she doesn't even know what happened to her mom. How much harder, in your opinion, is the not knowing if she's okay, you know, or if she's out there, if she's still alive? There's always that thought, maybe she's still alive.
Yeah. Well, that's the worst thing for any of the victim families of crime. It's bad enough that your loved one's been murdered and you have the body and not know who did it, but to not even know what happened is the absolute worst thing. But we're right. She has to move on with her life. It will always still be there niggling. When they solve this, it will still be there as much as it is today. You know, it's not going to, there's no closure in this. Closure is a bad word. But at least she'll know, hopefully. But yeah, they'll feel about it the rest of their lives. A lot of people go through this, unfortunately. I hear from them all the time. The not knowing is the absolute worst part of it.
Yeah. Horrible. I think this is the announcement from the Today Show about the Wordle game show. Let's take a look.
Family, they just stopped everything and said, we'll wait for you.
Of course.
And Hollywood is like a really tough business, as you know. And I didn't expect that. And I just want to say thank you. It means so much to me.
We can't do it without you. We thought you were going to be great. And then you did it. And like 200 crew and cast, everyone was like, we can't do the show without Savannah Guthrie. You are fantastic.
You are the sweetest.
You are so good.
Jimmy,
you're funny.
Thank you so much for coming on.
It's a big announcement.
I know. It is. It's exciting.
We're bringing Wordle to TV.
Wordle is coming to TV.
NBC, come on,
baby.
Oh, my
God.
Hey. Wordle, let's go.
Craig.
Oh, we got some swag. You're so lucky. Yours is a five-letter word. We had to make mine Savvy.
Yeah, you like that?
Savvy's
Jimmy
good nickname.
And Savvy. Here we go. You know, when everything happened with me and my family, they just stopped everything and said, we'll wait for you.
That part of it repeats, but what is this? Savannah, happy to have something joyful to share. Thank you, NBC, New York Times, Jimmy Fallon, and UTAS, her agent. Savannah Guthrie to host Wordle game show. When I said Wordle, Lieutenant Bob Krieger, I saw a head nod. Are you still playing Wordle, and do you play against Kurt Dabb? It's still a thing, I guess.
I know it's still a thing. I have never once played it in my life. I know of it. But my sister, who was actually out here when all of this started, she was visiting me from Indiana. She still plays it religiously because I'll see it pop up like in a Facebook feed. I'm like, I thought this went the way of the dodo as well. It had its 2 weeks. So apparently there's still some Wordle fans out there.
Yeah, I think it was bought by the New York Times. And who knew? Now it's becoming a game show, and it looks like it's executive produced by Jimmy Fallon. Is it okay for me to say that I really do like Savannah Guthrie a lot, but I don't like morning television? Is it okay for me to say that? I don't know. Will I be canceled? I have no idea. But Phil Ramos, do you get up and watch the Today Show by any chance? Is that something that's in your you play Wordle, Phil Ramos?
Man, I've never even heard that name. I have no idea what that is. You know, but
I think yeah, I think five. You had to solve a five. I think it's five letters. But yeah, you've got to solve five. If I'm correct, correct me, STS, if I'm wrong. Look at this, Ms. Take Eight. I knew we'd get one. I love Wordle and play every day with about six of my family members in a group chat. People do play in a group chat. I used to play against Doug and Matt, two of my friends of mine, and Matt may or may not be the chief meteorologist in Tucson, Arizona. And we were all very competitive, and it lasted for, I don't know, 5 days, and then I don't think we've ever played it again. But the other thing they got to figure out, Cloyd Steiger, is the timeline. If you're the detective, lead detective on this case, and you've been on the lead on a lot of big cases, I'm sure, yeah. Cloyd, how often are you going back to the timeline as it relates to Nancy Guthrie, the evening of January 31st into the early morning hours of February 1st?
Well, that's the only thing you know for sure is what happened that night. So you're going to be spending a lot of time looking at that and what's going on. And it's just a starting point. You know, you're going to be going back all the time. And when you get more information that may come up that may be related to that, you're going to go compare it to what you know and things like that. And it's very important to have a good timeline.
Yeah. So speaking about that, let me go back in reverse here. Lieutenant Bob, to you, I'm just going to sort of read it out here. Okay. Nancy reportedly arrives home 9:50 that evening, that fateful night, Saturday, January 31st, 1:47 a.m. And again, as you just heard Cloyd say, this is really the only stuff that we know for sure. 1:47 a.m., Ring camera disconnects. 2:12 a.m., mass figure reportedly seen near the home. 2:28, Nancy's pacemaker app disconnects, and then the blood evidence. How often, Bob, do you go back and wonder about that sequence of events? And I guess what stands out to you 100 days in about that timeline, if anything?
Well, the one thing that I always just keep coming back to is, you know, that's, you know, that time frame, 1 or 2 a.m. is about the time when she left the house, how she left it, why she left it. Still don't have the exact facts on that, but then there's still another 10 hours or so until the 911 call is made. So there's, you know, from the last time someone saw, I think it was 9:50 p.m. when she was dropped off, and you know, you're looking 12, 13 hours later, and so many things could happen. So much distance can be covered in that time. You know, and it's all about the unknowns. You know, something happened. They're trying to piece it together, but there's still so many missing pieces. Until they have something more tangible, more people to talk to, someone who was there, you know, it's still just a lot of hard work for the investigators. But the thing that always goes back to for me is just that more than that, it's 12 hours. Because like I said, they're talking about, oh, we need to search within a mile or two of the house. Well, in 12 hours, I can drive from here, from Tucson to probably, I don't know, north of LA, north of, you know, getting up that way into Texas very easily, you know, nearly 1,000 miles. So it's so vast. Like everything else with this, there's that time frame is so big. And that was it's a big hurdle to overcome for the investigators.
Yeah. I mean, we've watched this video, Phil Ramos, probably, you know, 10 million times, definitely more than letters to make up a Wordle word, which is five. Same question to you, Phil. I mean, that 9:50 time that she arrives, and then you go to 1:47 when the Google Nest cam disconnects. This mass figure coming in roughly at 2:12 a.m. and Cash Patel taking all the credit in the world as the FBI director that we have this video here. And then 2:28, that pacemaker disconnects, and as we will discuss also later on, in the hours right as this was happening, you know, there are people that are still saying that Pima County responded as though it was a person who was had wandered off, didn't really respond with the right resources. We'll have that debate in a minute. But of these times, this 9:50, this 1:47, this 2:12 a.m. where a mass figure is seen, what's most critical to you here, Phil Ramos?
Well, I would start with whoever dropped her off and find out what the habits were of when they drop her off. Do they just, when she gets out of the car, do they drive off or do they sit and wait to make sure she goes in? And if they sit and wait to make sure she goes in, how does she go in? Does she go in through a side door? Does she go in through the front door, which supposedly this is? Or how does she make entry into her own house out of habit? We all were creatures of habit. Every one of us goes into our house the same way every single time, unless we're close to the garage and got to unload golf clubs or something. But my first question would be, where did she go when she got out of the car, and what did you see there? Now, on a normal night, well, I didn't notice anything, but he wasn't looking for anything. But did you watch her go into the house, and how did she go into the house? And if she goes into the front of the house, how come there's no video of that?
All great questions. I think people are still trying to get to the answer to. And Lieutenant Bob, let me come back to you here, and we're going to show in just a minute. But Lieutenant Bob did something with Fox News where he takes us on a little bit of a tour, which I'm not even sure he has seen himself yet. But there was a map that was, I guess, released to the public. One of the only things released, Bob, from February 2nd, sort of showing some of the ground searches. And they involve some of the washes, but Mike Ruiz, I think, retweeted this today, which is why I caught it and was on top of mind again. But they didn't really go very far out. Just your general thoughts on the initial sort of search. Then I'll get Cloyd's take, and then we'll watch some of this video you put together with Fox.
So the initial thoughts are, they're going to search the immediate area. We know about her mobility problem. So if she goes somewhere, she probably didn't go too far if she did wander off on her own. And everyone's pretty familiar now with the neighborhood, quite honestly. If you're watching this, you've talked about it. It's not typical. There are a lot of these washes and a lot of pretty densely vegetated areas between houses, areas for people to hide and get lost in. Even if they don't want to get lost, that's in a neighborhood. So you can get turned around pretty quick. I'm sure that with the air support that they had, additionally, when additional air support got up, the investigators, someone was organizing a search of that area. I know search and rescue was out initially as some of the initial responders, and they're the ones who are really, really good at that, coordinating, making sure all the nooks and crannies get checked. But at that point, you have to start balancing, how far out are you going to search? If you go a mile or two in every direction from a single point, we talk about resource management. Then you have to start looking at most likely lies, which way people are going to go, or, is it worth our resources right now to go that way? Now, 100 days in, a lot of these places could have been searched since then, looking for any evidence or, unfortunately, even a body. But there's just a lot of areas to search. And like with everything else with this case, with the 30,000 leads, you're always managing that, your resources, what's most important right now. And then we're going to move on from there. And initially that search was important. And then it became less and less important as it expanded out, just because the likelihood of finding someone that far out is more like, that's more like a crapshoot. That's just getting lucky at some point when you get out a little bit further.
Thank you, Lieutenant Bob. And Cloyd, to you, a retired homicide detective from Seattle. By the way, if you appreciate the content, please hit the like and subscribe button. And for all the subscribers out there, thank you, COE, admonishing me to can't get to every individual subscriber. But if you pop up in green, I will do my best to get to you, beefing up that Patreon page as well. But Cloyd, here's skepticism, which is what law enforcement is good at. Until I see evidence of her coming home, the whole timeline is nonsensical. I'll put this one up too, because I happen to like this comment. Best true crime channel on YouTube. I happen to agree with you there as well, Chloe circa 76. But Cloyd, this is coming from, I guess, family, that she arrived back home. But and we've seen blood. So I assume that and it's been DNA'd back to her. I think we have to assume she comes home. What's your take on this comment that the timeline is nonsensical without knowing exactly when she returned home and what kind of condition she returned home.
Well, you know, you have to verify that. And the detective is going to have to interview the person directly. And a lot of that is that detective's gut feeling, having interviewed thousands of people that have lied to them and know and be able to tell, is this person telling the truth or being straight up? And you're right, there's blood. So she was home at some point. The good question is, why wouldn't she show up on the Ring camera? Did she not go in that way? Did she go in a different way? You know, did she have any other cameras around the house? Apparently not. But yeah, that's the whole, your premise is that that's correct. Mm-hmm. And then, but she did bleed going out. So she, presumably going out. Yeah. So that, you know, that's a point, and you know that. And like we were saying earlier, 12 hours, she could have been well into Mexico in 12 hours. And she may have been, you know, I don't know. But much harder to search down there than it is up here.
And that's a whole other story. A lot of people, you know, as far as the cartel goes, a lot of profilers, and there's Jim Clemente, a profiler who spoke about this. I'm going to play that as well in a little bit.
I know Jim.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It's an interesting comment here from Kelly McClellan. Has anyone on the panel started out with one theory, but since changed to thinking something else? Phil, have you, I mean, I think you've been pretty steady, right? In that you think this is sort of a botched poor man's job at, probably a robbery. Is that, you still sticking with that?
Yeah, I'm still sticking with that until I see or hear something that would point us in a different direction, which is what we got to do. I mean, we have to go where the facts and the evidence take us. There's no evidence of anything right now, so everything is speculation. But the one thing that we know for sure is this guy was no professional on the video. That's a given. You know, he probably had big red shoes on, but it hasn't persuaded me in another direction. But that's only because we don't have anything to take us in another direction. Something could pop up that's solid and corroboratable, and you can say, no, wait a minute, no, this is what happened, because we have ABC to tell us that's what happened. And, you know, my theory could easily go out the window if we have something that shows that, no, it didn't happen that way. This is how it happened.
Yeah, 100% true. I mean, Bob, to you, here's a tangible question here from the SoCal Kid. How come there's no sound with this video? This is actually Nest video, not Ring camera, so it's Google. But do we know, is there an audio component to this, Bob, that we know of that just hasn't been released?
Not that I'm aware of, but like the theory, there very well could be. Now, what I was told, and I think is pretty reliable, that these were fragments out there in the Nest ether that they were able to put together to get these videos. And the probability of sound is probably not that high. But that being said, it would not surprise me one bit if there were a lot more videos that they just haven't released. Because there's a reason this video was released. It has a suspect on it. Mm-hmm. Nobody needs to see anything with Nancy on it. None of us, none of the public, none of the media. That's for the investigators. So if I had to bet, I would say, yeah, there's probably more video they've been able to recover. Now, if it's viable, what's on it? No, that's anybody's guess. But what I was told is up to last week was that the way they recovered this was pretty technologically sound. So they were able to recover the images and put it into a video, and maybe part of the audio was just, you know, was just not there. But if you look at that, you're probably not going to hear too much other than Lee's rustling up against that camera.
But Bob, what does your gut tell you? Do you think that they do have potentially some video of Nancy and it just hasn't been released yet?
Yes.
There you go. Retired SWAT commander from Tucson, cooler by the lake to retired Seattle homicide detective Cloyd Steiger. Nancy's skin was so fragile, bruises and bandages on arms in most photos. Is it possible she bled a day or two before, maybe on her way to the mailbox? How sure are they about when that was left, Cloyd Steiger? Bringing up another interesting question.
Well, that was quite a bit of blood for just some casual bleeding. So I would think probably not. You know, that's probably relatively fresh. And they could probably tell when they got there. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you know, older people do bleed easier, but there was a lot of blood there for that. I mean, I wouldn't think that. And to go back to what you were saying earlier about changing your opinion all the time. If you are locked into an opinion, what happens? and you just stay with that, then you shouldn't be doing this job, because facts change. You have to go where the evidence takes you. You know, that looks like that blood, by the way, looks more like a bloody nose. It's not leaking off her arm. It's what we call low velocity spatter. And she's relatively stationary when it's happening because it has a stellate pattern to it.
Uh-huh.
If she was moving, there would be points that would point in the direction of the movement. So she was standing there for a minute or a few seconds anyway, and bled straight down, probably from a bloody nose or some other type of wound like that. She wasn't dead at that point. Like I've said that before, dead people don't bleed. So she may have been assaulted and started bleeding, and then they moved her wrong. But the fact that there's no blood past that is kind of suspicious, too. I mean, how did they put something on her face to stop the bleeding or something so it wouldn't leave a blood trail? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a very interesting question. Phil Ramos, what about that? I mean, there's really no trail. It is that low-velocity blood spatter, like Lloyd just said, but it's in one distinct area. Wouldn't you expect there, if she was carried out or something, for it to sort of trail along? I guess unless she shifts her head onto her, you know, chest, and it's now just bleeding under her shirt. But I mean, do you expect to see a trail, Phil?
You would expect to see a trail, but what that tells me is they either repositioned her so that the blood wasn't falling down and leaving a trail, or they covered up the wound that blood was coming from. But here's a question: how would they have known in the dark of that patio that she was leaving blood droplets coming out? You know, like Floyd said, there's no directionality to them. You know, there's the blood spatter is straight down. So that could be from a bloody nose, or it could be, it's hard to say. But I would have thought that there would be some more of a blood trail. But it tells me that perhaps the wound that blood was coming from was either being held together or covered, or they moved her. But the guy who was with her certainly had would certainly have some of her blood on his clothing.
Mm. Robin's Dogs makes a good point. Apart from the theories, the possibilities, the chaotic energy of all this, coming back to think of Nancy and the heart and fear she must have experienced is absolutely heartbreaking, which it is. And we, you know, we get a tendency to just get swept up in the true crime, you know, and sort of the narrative of it and the you know, the interesting sort of mystique of what happened. We forget about the human being. So just a check on us to remember that as well. Claude, I just wanted to come back to you, and then we're going to get to Bob's piece of video in a second. But 30,000 leads, that is a number that Bob Krieger put out there. Just in April alone, they got over 300 or 400 leads. And you've got to follow up on all that. I do not understand that, Floyd Steiger. You have to probably, you know, you quickly eliminate a lot of them, but how daunting a number is 30,000+ leads?
You know, that's the problem. You get 30,000 leads, and maybe 12 of them have anything to do with this case, right? But you don't know. And so the problem you have, and I've had big high-profile cases where you're just getting buried leads. So you have to have a team of people separate from the investigators that sift through them to the ones that look really good. You put them in this pile. To the ones that you put them in the middle, and then you have the ones that I was on a bus and I saw a guy that looked like I saw a guy that looked suspicious. That goes in the end of the pile over there, right? And so then you got to screen them again. And of these, which are the ones the most priority, and work your way down, because you got to separate the wheat from the chaff. That's the hardest part of these cases. You might have the lead in there that will solve this whole case, but until you recognize that and find it, it's pretty tough.
Bob, question from Lee in Tennessee, always in the chat. Shout out to Lee. I don't shout her out enough. There's a lot of people I don't shout out as much as I should. She's one of them. Bob, about how far out would BORTAC, that's the Border Patrol, you know, special tactical team, how far out would they have searched? Bob, your thoughts, and talk to us a little bit about the piece you did with Fox. I'll have you set it up and then I'll play some.
All right, as far as BORTAC, I don't know, and I would highly doubt that they came out early on. Now, BORSTAR, that's more of their search and rescue area. If the Sheriff's Department and the FBI needed help, they definitely would have reached out to them for resources. How far out from the house they would have gone, their specialty, the Border Patrols, whether it's BORSTAR or BORTAC, is out in the desert areas. And they're not just going to go out to an area to search without some sort of reasoning behind it. You know, a sighting of somebody, something unusual, things like that. So it's really difficult to say. I don't know what resources, especially in those first couple days, were used and where they searched and how they searched. But, you know, walking the neighborhoods probably within a mile or two of that, you know, that is honestly about, what the investigators and the people who were actually running the investigation thought was reasonable, you know, and at some point you do have to stop that. So that, as far as that goes, that, you know, it's a difficult answer without having some specifics to go out and chase in the desert. Yeah. And that's where they would work at.
And then this whole, you were talking to Michael Ruiz about the washes. What do we need to know about Tucson washes before we play this clip?
So these are very, very common. Every older neighborhood like Nancy's has these. They're just dry wash beds, river beds that, you know, have a lot of brush in them, trees, both upright, fallen over, debris that have been washed in there. A lot of great places to hide. You could just disappear in them, quite honestly. But every neighborhood has them. No matter where you are in the town, whether you're in the metro part of Tucson, two blocks from downtown, or, you know, 40 miles from the city center, this type of geography is everywhere. People use them. Animals use them. Bad guys use them to get away from the good guys when we're chasing them. So the good thing is most officers, deputies, and the beats that they work, they know them. Because, you know, these are the areas where people run to when they're trying to get away and they try and hide. What you'll see in this piece is just it's a very close. It's about 2 miles from Nancy's house. We just walked it and I wasn't real familiar. I knew where it was, but I never worked that part of town. So I was never really out there working it. I've walked a couple of other ones that are a little smaller, closer to Nancy's house. But with this one, you could literally drive a 4x4 through it unnoticed between roads. And the reason we went out that's about 2 miles out to the east. And it's not far from the Camino Real address where some of that early video was found of those two suspicious, I won't even call them suspicious, the two vehicles that may or may not have been involved. And I think at this point, it's very safe to say they probably weren't. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't something that should have been followed up on.
Yeah, and I think it was Fox News that got that video, not even Pima County Sheriff. So that was some cars sort of speeding by around the same time, not a long distance away. This is a question that was sort of answered earlier, which is Bob says he believes there's more video. And then you've got Gia and TJ's mom here asking Phil Ramos to be on the Men of STS calendar. It was for Krieger last time, but now we expand. This is that video. I think it's fairly long, actually, so I might break it up a little bit. But this is the man you're looking at, the bottom right corner. Not only is he an STS best guest, but he's now a Fox News superstar. And here we go.
Type of place, even though we're in the middle of a neighborhood.
And this always happens. Hang on a second.
100 yards, 150 yards, east-west between the nearest houses. But you, this is the type of place, even though we're in the middle of a neighborhood. Well, we're probably 100 yards, 150 yards east-west between the nearest houses. But you can throw something under the tree right there in this brush right back here. No, we could walk past it. I guarantee you we've walked by things that are probably suspicious in nature. Dead animals, things like that. And you're just not going to see them. The terrain itself acts as a natural hide for things. Even with airplanes, even with the FLIR that we have, the infrared, you're looking down, you can't see through a lot of different things. So it's not going to see something that might have been stashed underneath some of this brush. You talk about time frames elapsing, you know, temperatures and all that stuff. That all goes into why it becomes exponentially more difficult to find people and things out in environments like this as time goes on. You know, even if it's sort of remotely attached to this case, I'm going to find out if anybody searched this area. If they hadn't, I'm going to come down here. Now, again, we're not going to be able to move every brush, but I'm going to come down here with a reasonable amount of people, resources, walk it like we're doing now, get some people off in the brush, set up a skirmish line. Just, you're looking for anything that's out of place. It might be a broken limb. It might be, you know, a rock that's kicked over that you say, all the other rocks are different colored. That one got kicked over for a reason. Let's check this area. But, you know, it would probably take months with 100 people to do a when I say a thorough search, search every inch of this little half-mile grid that we've walked down this wash.
I'm going to hold it right there. I mean, Cloyd Steiger, you just heard Bob say it would take an inordinate amount of time just to search this area. I mean, I don't need to tell you, this looks a lot different than Seattle, where you've got, you know, greenery and mountains. And I mean, although there is some greenery here, I mean, just what do you make from your perspective as a retired Seattle homicide detective to now come into a terrain like this and look for potentially a body?
Well, obviously you have to use dogs or something like that, either bloodhounds or cadaver dogs, and search the area. They might hit on something that's not even a body, but it's just some piece of something has a scent on it, and that would help you, but it'd be tough. Visibly, it'd be very tough, but you have to have dogs.
Yeah. Phil Ramos, you are from a desert environment in Las Vegas, but a little bit of a different desert, I think. Your thoughts just watching this, we're about halfway through this, but your thoughts watching this and how it compares, I guess, to Vegas and how you would even approach. Bob, what did you say? How long would it take to search this with 100 people?
Depending on the grid size, and like Cloyd said, you're going to be using other resources, especially dogs. But as vast as it's a couple hundred yards wide, it would maybe not a month. I exaggerated a little bit there, but it's going to take some time. You're not going to do it just a couple hours. It's probably going to take days. When I say search, you know, you're moving everything. You're going to see everything within those few inches and moving all the brush. And that's, this was a lot thicker even than I was expecting when we were down there looking at it.
Yeah. And Phil, I'll get back to you in 1 second, but just give us a little more perspective on where this is in relation, like where are we compared to Nancy's house right now?
So we're about, as the crow flies, probably about 3/4 mile to her east, east of the house. It's a little bit east of Campbell. And it's an old neighborhood just like hers, but even less traveled than hers, just the way the neighborhood is set up. Some of the roads dead end. And this is just a pretty big wash that comes down. It's going to roll on down into the Rito River and then just push on out. Actually, this wash probably ends relatively close to where they found that bone last week. So, you know, just one of those things, that bone could have been on Mount Lemmon 150 years ago and just kept washing downstream with all the storms.
And by the way, this is why my beloved Mabel Rose, no longer with us, had to get rattlesnake training. She used to walk with Tom McKinney, who has Dog Day Adventures. Shout out to Dog Day Adventures. But he used to walk them in the washes here. And I used to be terrified for Mabel Rose every single day because those dogs like to sniff with their faces in that ground. You never know when a rattlesnake's going to pop up. But Phil Ramos, you're used to the desert, maybe not exactly laid out in this manner, but what is the most daunting part about this terrain to you?
Desert is very different. You know, we don't get the monsoonal seasons that cause all that shrubbery and trees and tall bushes and stuff. Man, to me, that would be a nightmare trying to search inside those because, you know, Bob's right. You could throw a 10-pound animal in there and never see him. Our desert out here has, at the tallest, maybe 2-foot, 3-foot sagebrush and occasional cactus, but nothing like that. Because, it's a very dry desert out here in Vegas, so we don't have shrubbery like that. That man, that's a tough search right there.
Mm-hmm. Black Widow, you ever see anything like this in the Republic of Ireland? I don't think so. This is the Great American Southwest. Proud Grizzly member for 11 months. I'm not bringing it up so I can play the rest of this, but shout out to Proud Grizzly. And here is the rest of this. This is Bob Krieger showing Fox News and now STS. What's up?
You see how difficult that's going to be. You're going to have to move all of this stuff. And
by the way, I'm not going to say Bob Krieger might be a little bit winded or not. Bob, how tall are you?
By the way, 6'1".
I'm 6'1". You're right. Yeah. You got a big melon, but here we go. He's out of chasing shape at the moment.
You know, it's then a balancing act at the top. What resources go where? Is it more viable that this happened in the wash, or should we use those resources to follow up on leads that are being called in and things like that? No, this is pretty normal for Tucson, for these types of neighborhoods. Like I said earlier, the wash is bigger than I thought it was. You know, just looking in front of us now, you're looking at probably 30 feet wide, at least, if not more. You can drive a semi down this thing if you wanted to, you know. That surprised me because typically these washes are a lot more narrow and they have some of the canyons, you know, to our left and some of the little cliffs. That typically comes down into them. So this is a large one. Easy to drive, easy to walk, but also at the same time, easy to be seen. If someone's above us right now, the big open area, we're going to be more visible. And now that it's starting to narrow down, this is more typical of like the neighborhood washes that run. And sometimes they run a block, sometimes they run a half mile, quarter mile that we're on now. But hundreds and hundreds upon these throughout the county and the city, if not thousands. They're just literally everywhere. It's just the nature of the terrain, the way the geography was made. What, two miles, a little bit less driving from Nancy's house. Familiar with the area, we're here within 5 minutes. And you know, we could drive down this road for 10 seconds and be completely out of sight from any roadway. So then you now have what you need, which is time and some cover from prying eyes. Something went wrong and they wanted to get rid of her. This could be an area, I think they'd have to be very familiar with it because you're not going to stumble upon this area from Nancy's house, but it's close enough to where if you did some scouting days and weeks ahead of time, which there's some evidence that says they might have been out here prior to that night, this would be an area that I would look at and say, all right, let's figure this out. At this point, I can't imagine saying no to anyone offering help, whether it be cadaver dogs, the Cajun Navy has popped up again. Those are just extra feet on the ground that I don't have to pay, quite honestly. Maybe if they find something, awesome. We probably wouldn't have found it. If they don't, great. You know, I personally would be accepting some of that help. There's no reason not to at this point. Early on, I could see why the sheriff would say, hey, I don't want you in the neighborhood searching. That's still, you know, that's still a scene. Let the professional.
All right. So, I mean, that is Bob Krieger giving you a real sort of firsthand account of, look at this, McSpunky, of what it's like in those washes. Where you been, McSpunky? He's an OG-er, been gone but never forgotten. You are not forgotten. McSpunky, welcome back. Bob, I mean, you bring up a point that everyone's scratching their heads about, which is still Chris Nanos, the sheriff, does not really want anyone helping. Cajun Navy is offered. I mean, this is just a crazy vast expanse. What is going on? Why not let people, and the people of Tucson are good people, I know they want to help. Why be so headstrong and not allow people in to search? We just looked at how crazy an obstacle it is to get through.
I don't have a good answer for that. I would have accepted at this point anyone's help. And I don't know if it goes on that clip, but like I said, a lot of this area is public land. So these folks can go out. They can go out. They don't need permission from the sheriff to do a lot of these searches. If they want to go out a little bit further into the desert areas, I understand initially why they said no. And I touched on that, you know, just trying to keep the scenes ourselves. But then we're 100 days in. Nothing's going to get any more contaminated today than it's, you know, than it was, you know, 6 weeks ago. So if these folks want to come in and help, let them come in and help. There are extra resources that that could be utilized. And they may be out there that we're just not aware of.
And Bob, what's the deal with the bloodhounds? We are a dog-friendly show. Mm-hmm. I mean, they brought out cadaver dogs at one point, but they never unleashed the bloodhounds as far as we know. Why?
Well, it all depends on what type of dog it is. Is it working off of scent? Is it working off of fear of a suspect? The bloodhounds that I am familiar with in Southern Arizona, the Department of Corrections has some great ones. And that's the typical, hey, here's Nancy's shirt. They sniff it, and they have to find a track. And then they go on. Again, it requires some leads. Most of these searches, especially with dogs, you're not just going to go out and randomly do. Because the dogs, you know, can only work for so long, especially in the heat now that it's getting warmer. So they're going to use those resources when it's acceptable. Early on, the bloodhounds would have been great. But, you know, if they don't have anything to track, they're not working. Other types of dogs search in other types of manners. So it's all part of that. So the short answer is, why didn't release the bloodhounds? There was probably never a viable time to do that, meaning they had something that was, oh, we found a sock right here. They smell it, and then the dog takes you where it needs to go. And that probably never happened.
Yeah. And then my question might be a moot point, but Cloyd Steiger, back to you, and I'm not sure if you muted yourself for this. I think you did. Is there any circumstance right now, 100 days in, where you could deploy dogs and have them be effective? What would that require?
Well, you could if you had a viable reason, especially cadaver dogs. They can find bones and stuff from a long time ago. So, yeah, you could. But, I mean, it's just a shot in the dark right now, unless you have some idea of an area or a reason to go to an area. But, yeah, I'd still use dogs. And, you know, maybe they should have used bloodhounds early on in the days right after the event to see how far away they took her before they put her in the car and where that car might have been. You know, I've had bloodhounds out a couple of days later that followed a track quite a ways, you know, and then it disappears because they got in a vehicle. So, but he's right. Now you couldn't put a bloodhound out, but you could put cadaver dogs out.
Yeah. I mean, Cloyd, if you're the lead investigator on this, what would you be doing on day 100 besides scratching your head?
Well, you got to be looking at the leads and just going through them. Find that one. Find that cherry that is in there somewhere, and out talking to people and, you know, thinking outside the box. What could I do next? What could I do now? Don't go down a checklist. You got to be dynamic and just looking at what you got, looking at your leads. What looks feasible, what doesn't, you know, that's the big question.
Do you do that like in your head? Or are you constantly talking to other people in the department? You constantly talking to buddies of yours, guys in homicide, people in other areas? Are you saying, you know, what are we missing here?
Well, both. I do it in my head all the time. I would do it. I'd be home at laying in bed at night, going to sleep and going, oh, we should have done this, you know, or let's go do that. But also bouncing ideas off people I trust, other experienced detectives and things like that. You don't go to administration, I tell you that right now, because they think all the credit, but they don't know what they're doing.
So, Phil Ramos, you wouldn't go to, like, the assistant chief at all. But Phil, I guess my question to you is, you know, Bob said early on that maybe 100 days is just sort of, you know, significant to the public, but not really to law enforcement. But is this a hard day on them, do you think? Do you think they feel like, not that they have failed, but like that it is just utterly frustrating that they're not further along?
Well, the frustration about not being further along is there constantly. They probably didn't even realize it was 100 days until somebody said something to them, because they're so busy looking at what they have been looking at and looking it over, you know, like Cloyd says, you just keep going through all those clues and you look for something that you think, I had to miss something. There's something got to be here. And you pull a partner and say, take a look at this. Tell me what I missed. You can't look at stuff enough until you've figured out, is this a good tip or is this a bad tip? Then you go to the next one. And then the next one, and then the next one. And there's always going to be stuff to do as long as there's tips to go through.
Bob, I'm glad that G and TJ's mom asked this because it was on my list, but I think I overlooked it. Why is he not speaking anymore, meaning Sheriff Chris Nanos? We talked about this a little bit on the last show, but especially on the 100-day mark, if I'm the sheriff, I'm going out there to the public and just reassuring them, we know it's 100 days. We are working this case as hard as anybody. We're taking this more seriously than anybody. Unfortunately, we haven't had the results, but we are working on it. Just to say that, if there's nothing else to offer, is your friend Sheriff Chris Nanos, is he making a judgment in error here?
You can add it to a list of errors in judgment, in my opinion. And I think not necessarily the 100 days, but I believe it was Fox News they caught him in the parking lot a day or two ago, and they actually brought up Mother's Day. And what a opportunity to give a little bit of confidence back to the family. And he stumbled across his words. He hadn't even thought about maybe putting some type of message out to them. His job is to give the public a sense of confidence in the department and in the investigation. His job isn't to investigate. It's just to do that. He is the agency head, and I don't know what book they read to do what they've done since day one of this, but it was the wrong book. We can all agree on that. Mm-hmm. And this was a perfect opportunity to fix some of those early missteps, to give confidence back to the family, to the citizens of Pima County, to the Pima County Board of Supervisors. And he failed in that yet again. And it's frustrating. I wish for everybody involved that the agency was doing a better job at messaging. And it could be done. You don't have to give answers. You don't have to talk about the investigation. But you can message, and the people could shake their heads and smile and say, man, I trust that dude. It's like my cousin Vinny. I want that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no one doing that right now with Sheriff Nanos. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating because while it doesn't necessarily affect the investigators, it affects the investigators.
Yeah. Bob, this is a good question again. The media in Tucson, do you get the sense? I mean, obviously the coverage has to be less than it was, but is it still a focus for local media?
It still pops up, and it does. It's not near, like, it's not every day. It's not every newscast. It's not leading it. But when things are important and it needs to be put out there, they are. Whether it's something from the national media, from shows like this, from podcasts, from YouTubers, if something's even remotely associated with it, they've been talking about it. So it hasn't kind of disappeared yet, and I don't think it will anytime soon, especially, you know, because of who the victim is and who the victim's family is.
Yeah. Shout out to Judy Herbert, one of the most generous in all of SDS Nation, gifting 10 surviving survivor memberships, which will be divvied out. I always thought it was the COE that divvied them out, but apparently it is a computer that does that in 2026. So that is good to know. Back real quickly to you, Bob, just that video we watched. One of the things that you talked about, but I think you get into a little more detail, maybe further down the road, is literally a car could have just pulled up in a wash. I mean, like a four-wheel drive car, and maybe not gone down a traditional, you know, thoroughfare. I mean, am I right about that? Is that something that you think that was potentially possible here?
Yes. There was actually car tracks, vehicle tracks in this wash when we were walking it. And we walked from road to the north to road to the south. So they could have came in up north of where it would have turned into Camino Real. And had they just dipped into that wash, I don't even think a two-wheel drive car could have gotten through there all the way down to the next road, about a half mile down, and then went out probably all the way down to River Road. So it was very drivable, very viable for that to happen. Michael Ruiz actually shared with me that there was an abandoned CRV there within a day or two of that, just parked right at basically the entry point where we walked in, which was like, well, there could be a million different reasons why it was there. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they did a good job of it. I know they did a good job of investigating it. Was it stolen or whatnot? But a vehicle like that could have easily driven, you know, down that road, down that wash, if they even just turned in and tried to. It wouldn't even have been difficult.
Shout out to Mike Ruiz, Fox News Digital. You should give him a follow on Twitter if you're not already. He's one of the lead reporters, I would say, on this case. McSpunky, look at this. I don't know if he was guilted or what, but he's giving us a super chat. Thank you to McSpunk for this. Good to see you back. McSpunk, I know you'll never believe this, but I actually was thinking about you the other day. Sometimes I wonder where these OG STSers have gone, and now you're back. So I'm glad to hear that. I just want the I was going to say the old timers, but that's not politically correct. But I wanted Cloyd Steiger and Phil Ramos just to weigh in. Cloyd, I'll start with you. If you're the sheriff in Tucson, do you need to say something to the public, especially on day 100? This guy's caught in all kinds of situations and conflicts, the FBI among them. But really, since the beginning, he's given like piecemeal interviews to media organizations here and there. But on day 100, wouldn't you expect the sheriff to come out and at least mollify the public and say, this is what we've been doing. We're working on this. We've got this. We're going to solve this.
Yeah, I mean, you want him to come up and say something. The problem with him is he came out and said way too much too early. Shut the hell up. I didn't have anything to do with this case, but I see on the news and say, shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Because all an administrator do is screw things up for you. They're not in there. They don't know anything about what's going on day to day. They get recaps. But just shut the hell up about specifics about the investigation. Talking generalities. We're working. We're doing this. We're doing that. And you're right. He probably should have come out today or near today, Mother's Day, again, like he said, and say, you know, Savannah doesn't have a mother that she can call today. We're doing everything we can to figure out what happened and go from there. But, you know, don't give out the minutiae of the case, especially early on.
Well, if he doesn't come to us, Fox News went to him, and this was Chris Nanos walking out of the Pima County Sheriff's Department. I'm actually surprised that Fox News got onto the parking lot without getting tossed away, but here we go. This is, I think, from yesterday on Mother's Day.
How are you? Good. It's Mother's Day on Sunday. I was wondering if you had a message for the Guthrie family. Sorry, sir?
Okay.
You're okay? It's 100 days now almost, sir. Are you guys any closer to solving?
We are.
Good. That's good to hear. Thank you, sir. You have a great weekend. Thank you.
There he goes out in his Corvette. I'll play it back with no sound. He looks like he was ready to throw down right here. Lieutenant Bob, your old boss. This is Sheriff Chris Nanos being confronted in the parking lot. Being asked, you know, this was not Mother's Day. Obviously, it was coming up on Mother's Day in 100 days. And he's got kind of a defensive-ish looking posture there. But what do you make of this? He says they're closer. Do you buy it?
In a vacuum, yeah, they are closer. I've said it before. Every day, they're a day closer to solving. We just don't know when that day is going to be. You know, I think this whole clip just screams of kind of what the problem is. not prepared. Not. He should have a bunch of answers ready to go. He knows the media is going to be there. I don't know about you, but if I were the sheriff, I would not park my Corvette in the spot where visitors who come to my building need to be. That would be parked far away, and I would have the courtesy to walk into my office. It is what it is. And you know, I actually understand why he's like this and why he looks like this every time. It's self-induced, but it's the reality of where we are right now. And I think he's just not prepared to lead an agency, not prepared to lead this investigation. I think it's shown tenfold over the last 100 days.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Ramos, this is sort of a metaphor in a way for the way this whole thing has gone. I mean, this guy just looks confused. He's got his, you know, whatever, thousands of dollars, white Corvette that's brand new looking, sitting right there on display. Obviously he's got issues with leading the agency. But again, this brings me back to, the original question, which is, should he have had something to say today, on the 100 days? And do you buy this, that he says that they're getting closer? It sounds like he's just almost making it up on the cuff. We don't know if he is closer.
No, and I think he's patronizing by that statement, but man, put that vet in the garage and get a detective car and drive that around. That's just not right. And as far as coming out and saying something should be said, but it shouldn't come from him. It should come from his PIO, and the PIO should be handling most of this, because he's just not able to do that in a professional manner. That's why you have PIOs. So yeah, just keep the public informed, whether you're, you know, closer or not. But hey, tomorrow we're all going to be closer to our death anyway. So, I mean, that, I think he was just patronizing by saying that.
Yeah. Bear with us. It's 100 days, a little bit more to go through here. We're going to get to it. You heard Cloyd Steiger say that he knows Jim Clemente. Well, Jim Clemente is a very, very well-known criminal profiler. Here he is speaking to Fox News the other day about this case.
Spatter evidence shows me that he did not wrap up her body and carry her out. She was alive. She did cough up blood. right outside the front door. He did not adequately prepare for the fact that there was a camera there. And so it tells me that he is not a sophisticated offender, a sophisticated criminal who was extremely forensically and criminally sophisticated. He was sort of bumbling his way through this, and he made other mistakes. And I believe those mistakes will directly lead to his capture.
There you go. Cloyd Steiger, let me just rehash that real quick. That she was taken alive. She wasn't bundled up, I guess, you know, in some sort of rug or carpet or something that he was alluding to. That she coughed up blood, he says. That this person did not adequately prepare for that camera being there and was sort of a bumbling fool. And that bumblingness, he says, will lead to his capture or at least a break in the case. Do you agree with that blunt assessment on his part?
Well, I said from the beginning, the guy that walked up on that porch is not a Rhodes Scholar. He's not, you know, the brains of this operation. If he did it alone, he should have been caught by now. But, I agree generally with what he said.
And Cloyd, I wanted to bring this photo up again. This came up on a show that you were not on, but the shrubbery that he uses, that he handles to sort of block the Nest Cam, it appears like some of that is just sitting there next to the blood. And the question from, you know, a couple of shows ago was, how come the FBI or how come Pima County didn't bring this in as evidence and try to retrieve some DNA? He was handling this shrubbery quite a bit. Was that a mistake or is that a nothing burger?
It was a mistake. I mean, people say, well, he was wearing gloves, he's not going to leave DNA. But if he's wearing the gloves and he touches his face and then touches something else, he's transferring the DNA. I mean, it may or may not be on there, but you have to test it.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
That was it. I mean, just because people think if you're wearing gloves, there's no DNA. Well, that's not true. You scratch yourself, you do whatever, you know, you're touching things and there's transfer and it happens. And then it goes on there. It's not going to be in a great volume, but it might be enough. I mean, it should have been collected, especially once they, you know, they had a video of it, which is a few days later, but they should have collected it immediately because it was right there at the scene. Collect it and put it away. If you don't need it, you don't need it. If you need it, you got it. And that's the thing.
Yeah. Bob, back to you since you're local and, that has to do with Sheriff Nanos. This was back in the news cycle a couple of days ago, but it's worth discussing again. He's pushing back on claims from an anonymous critic who is saying that investigators rushed to judgment and assumed that Nancy Guthrie was a wander off, basically, mm-hmm. a person who wandered off. He said that since day one, the investigation was treated as both a missing persons case and a criminal investigation. What do you make of this sort of back and forth? We don't know who, obviously it's anonymous. We don't know who it is, but what do we know about that back and forth about the sort of the immediate moments after this was called in about whether it was some, they were looking for someone who just wandered off or if they took it more seriously?
I've said from the beginning, that first couple hours, if I had responded to it, I would have initially thought, without anything else, before the video, before talking to even the family, it was a wander off. It happens a lot. For whatever reason, it happens a lot here in Tucson. But that being said, the people who investigate those types of calls are also our homicide unit. So once they got in, those investigators should be more track. You can co-investigate them. You know, this is a wander off, but guess what? What if it's not? And then I think as soon as they started getting information from the family that she wasn't very mobile, you have this blood at the front door. It's like the brush. It never hurts to take too much, but it always hurts to take too little. Mm-hmm. So investigate it early on as a homicide, which I don't think there's a lot of evidence. And when we say early on, in the first day or so, I guarantee within the first 8 or 10 hours, they're like, oh, okay. They had transitioned from probably within the first 2 or 3 hours of being on scene, transitioned from this is a walk away to this is something more suspicious, which, you know, I hate to say it, but it doesn't bode well for the. There's a lot of stuff you see that should have been taken. There's a lot of evidence. Mm-hmm. Like Cloyd said, it's better to take it and not need it. But once you gave that scene up and the media walked up and took these videos that we're now watching,
yeah,
you've lost most of your investigative credibility on those things. You know, there's so many holes can be poked into it now, and it's a hard, it's more, much more of an uphill battle.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy to me. I mean, Brian Enten shot that blood video the next day or so. I could not believe that they released the scene, and I cannot believe that that was 99 or 98 days ago. McSpunky is back, making up for lost time, gifting 10 Surviving the Surviving Survivor. I'm saying my own podcast wrong. Surviving the Survivor memberships. Gets hard to say quickly. Phil Ramos, to you. I mean, just on that notion of this debate about whether or not they treated it as a missing person who just wandered off versus something more significant. How big a deal is that or not in those first couple of hours right after this is called in?
Well, it could be a very big deal. And I wanted to pick Bob's brain about this. Bob, is your air unit 24/7? Do you have a bird up in the air all the time or just certain hours?
Not 24/7. Typically, they'll land at about 02 unless they're working something. But they can be usually back up within about an hour or so. They're pretty good about that.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I was wondering. Why, if they were treating this as a missing person or a walkaway, why didn't they have the helicopter searching, circling, that doing a search pattern around the neighborhood? That is something that would be a standard protocol in a case like this, especially with birds up in the air.
They did. There was an issue with the airplane because we have both platforms. The airplane's a much better search tool for us. But our helicopter did go up. It doesn't have quite the equipment and the capabilities. But my understanding, they were up relatively quick. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was a Sunday. So I don't believe the helicopter pilots work on Sunday morning. So it would have been a call-in. So there would have been a little bit of a lag there. But again, probably within an hour or two, they would have been up.
I mean, would you just step back from it? We're in the tail end of this show. You step back from it and think that Savannah Guthrie is somehow able to go to work every day, and her brother and her sister, and you just don't know where your mother is? I mean, that's really a crazy thought. We know that this doesn't happen often, especially to people of that age, but just really a wild and distressing thought. Cammy Day here, gifting 5 memberships. Thank you very much. And should they have look at this, I love all things STS, we love you back, Nikki Cuds. I wish they got a chopper up, and I wish they had more answers for us. One other thing I want to get to, and then we'll get to final thoughts. I mean, there is really a serious recall effort underway in earnest to remove Sheriff Chris Nanos, both a Democrat and a Republican, I believe, on a 5-seat board. Bob, correct me if I'm wrong. Or plan a move to vacate Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos's office over the next week or so. And I saw a name that was familiar because he was there getting involved in politics when I was still there, Bob, and that is Dr. Matt Hines. Mm-hmm. What is the reality right now of this recall? You've got a Republican, you've got a Democrat. Is it 5 seats? And what is the possibility that they actually remove him from office?
That's a question better for them, but I will tell you that it is a 5-seat board. There are 4 Democrats and 1 Republican on the board. Both Steve Christie, the lone Republican, and Matt Hines have been very vocal, saying that the sheriff needs to step down. And also says it's not because of the Nancy Guthrie investigation and the debacle that this has turned into. It is because of his inability to tell the truth since really day one of his being hired 40 years ago. He lied in a deposition on a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against the county 3 months ago, or let's see, December of last year, however many months that is, 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And that has all come to light because of the problems that have arisen. People, good journalists, looked into it and said, hey, there's something going on here with this guy. And they started doing the digging that back in 1982-83, nobody did, and nobody's really questioned it since. So there's a couple different avenues that I understand that the board has. The recall is in effect. That was put together by a Republican running for Congress, Daniel Gutierrez. I know they're constantly out collecting signatures. That's one avenue. If they can get 122,000 signatures or so, there could be a recall election. The board is working another avenue where they're looking at, the bottom line is that the man lied. He may have perjured himself. This is incredibly important for the head law enforcement official in any agency. But that's a deal breaker for a cop in my book. You don't get to come back from that ever. We have one voice. You get to say that once. And when you lie, you've lost all credibility when it comes to investigations. How is anyone supposed to follow him as a leader? How are the citizens of Pima County supposed to be confident in that? So the board is looking at that. And there's also a statute from, I believe, like the 1860s that may give the board a little bit of an opportunity to vacate that elected position. But like everybody knows, elected officials are, there's a lot of Teflon around them. It's very, very difficult to remove them. So there's a lot of bipartisan movements right now to try and get him out of office. And quite honestly, I know Kurt said the other day, at some point, it's time to retire. It's time to realize that his legacy is set in stone now. There's no changing Chris Nanos' legacy. This is what it is. It was built on lies, and it's going to end with this debacle of an investigation. Not an investigation, but a debacle of what he has presented. And that's where we are. And it's probably – he's had a great run. Retire right off into the sunset.
In your white Corvette. Racer Girl, gifting 5 memberships. I fear that the COE has not seen me pulling up all the other stuff and thanking people like Cammy Day. Thank you, Cammy Day. Don't forget to hit the like button. Let me just address this. Why not talk about other missing people? There's a crazy number in this country. I don't want to quote it because I'll be off by a couple hundred thousand, but it is certainly in the hundreds of thousands of people who go missing. Phil Ramos knows there's a big problem in the indigenous Native American community with that. Would I sit here and love to talk about every single one of them? 100%. Do they all deserve equal airtime? 100%. The sad reality of the world that we live in is this is a big story. We cover big stories. People send me stuff. We've done stories on Amy Hilliard, who's a missing mom of two. I would like to do other stories. If you know missing people, and we can find an angle to do the story, we will do it. But 100% agree with you that we should be talking about all missing people out there. It's almost impossible to do. There are literally way too many to do even probably 5 a day or even 10 a day or even, I don't know, maybe even 1,000 a day. There's too many missing people out there to do that. So our thoughts are with them. Shout out to Miss Annie Kay. Member for 29 months. Hard to believe that we've been around that long. This is now Savannah Guthrie's Mother's Day message here, her post on Instagram. I'll play that. We'll get final thoughts.
My own mommy. Miss you. The angles are
not. Yeah, do a pose.
Look at me.
And weary traveler searching for the way to go.
Absolutely devastating, gutted for Savannah Guthrie. He was a homicide detective for 22 years in Seattle, more than 35 years on the force. Thank you for your service, retired detective Cloyd Steiger. I know you're anxious to get going brand new as a cadet in the Vegas Police Department that you've decided that
you're going to be showing up there tomorrow morning.
Cloyd, on a serious note, does this get solved in your opinion? And if so, how do you think it gets solved?
Does it get solved? I'd say yes. It might be 10 years from now, for all I know, but it will be solved. One thing I want to mention, you talk about whether this being thinking as a walkaway or a serious crime.
Yeah.
When those first detectives showed up on the scene and saw the blood and saw the missing ring camera, right then they should have known this isn't a walkaway. Mm. Right? Those are in the business, we call that a clue. And so they got to follow that, and go from there. And hopefully they did realize that seeing those two things, oh, this isn't somebody who walked away. How come the ring camera's missing or whatever? How come there's blood on the porch? So And they probably did.
Look at this. You know, we try to, my mom is a child Holocaust survivor. She always used humor, still does, to get through things. Can I please be the stylist to get the best guest styled for the STS calendar? One day we will actually have a real STS calendar. It sort of started as a joke. It will end as reality at some point. I don't know if that will be the end of our show, but somehow it will end. Lieutenant Bob Krieger, you know we're reserving. What's your birth month, Bob?
November.
Well, you will be Mr. November in that calendar.
Bam.
What say you? Does this end with some sort of resolution in our lifetimes, Bob Krieger? Are we going to see how this ends? And if so, what do you think would crack the case here?
There is going to be resolution. I hate the word hope, but I hope it's in our lifetime. It's going to be through good police work. It's going to be through some dumb luck. It's going to be a combination of all of that at this point. There's going to be some evidence. There's going to be some DNA. There's going to be a tip. There's going to be a leak in somebody. Whether they find Nest Cam guy out in the desert dead, they're going to find something. And that's going to then lead to other things. So, yes, it is going to be solved. The family will get what they deserve is not a good word, but what they need for their healing. And I want to say one thing real quick before I go on my kind of last closing thoughts on the video that Savannah put out there. No matter how this ends, and I think we all know that she's probably not with us anymore, and that's a safe assumption, no one can ever take the memories, the good memories that Savannah has, that the family has. Those will only become stronger. I lost my mom 18 years ago, and to this day, still dream about her, still have all of those thoughts, and they never fade. So, you know, the tragedy that they're going through, it hurts, but the human psyche, the human body is an amazing thing, and they're going to get through it. And I think that video just showed all those times, and that's what's going to do it for all of them. So that's kind of how I wanted to end today.
Very, very well said. I know you wanted to end there, but someone had a comment. Make sure you ask Bob about a tortoise. what do I need to know about a tortoise?
Well, to go along with our best dogs and cats that I have, I also have a desert tortoise. I did an interview with Brian Etten two weeks ago. He was over here, and the last probably 10 minutes of it revolved around Maverick, my tortoise, my desert tortoise. He's got a great habitat. And they're the coolest little pets in the world. They're pretty free range. They can go months without food and water.
Wait, how big is a desert tortoise?
Desert tortoises don't get big. They're not those 200-300-pound tortoises that you see. Those are typically African sulcatas. Desert tortoise, about the size of a dinner plate. Maverick's about 25 years old. Wow. I had one that passed away that was about 90. Wow. I adopted Maverick after that. And so he's turned into a bit of an internet star, thanks to Brian. And, nobody saw anything on that interview other than my two dogs and then Maverick the tortoise. So
have you ever met Tank the tortoise that walks around downtown Tucson?
I've heard of him. I've never met him, though, yes.
Tank's one of those huge tortoises.
He's a sulcata, yeah.
Yeah, he screeches. Yep. He walks real slowly, as you might imagine, through downtown Tucson. And I'm sure he's still around because those guys live forever. We'll ask the Godfather this, but Lee in Tennessee, she wanted, I didn't understand, she wanted to know if Maverick can be in our, we need a Pets of STS calendar for sure. Yeah. Maverick will be in there for sure. But Kelly McClellan, we'll ask the Godfather of true crime. That is Phil Ramos, retired Las Vegas homicide detective. He retired back in 2006, came back. I did not know that for a cold case. Phil Ramos still has a very sharp mind, one of the best homicide detectives to ever do it. And your final thoughts, but before you get there, Phil Ramos, from Kelly, how do you think this case will be solved? DNA, a tip, finding remains? Where do you put your money on that?
Yes.
Well, finding remains is certainly going to be one of the reasons. But, remember, they've got, if I recall correctly, they've got suspect DNA from inside the house, all the hoopla that happened when they found those gloves on the side of the road. And then they extracted DNA from those gloves and said it wasn't a match for the suspect DNA they had in the house. and the suspect DNA wasn't in CODIS. So a lot of people don't realize that CODIS is continuously receiving DNA profiles 24/7 every day. So there's a chance that if this guy gets arrested and his DNA is uploaded into CODIS, they're going to get a hit. That very well could be the way that this gets solved. And I would say those two are the best possibility. If they find her remains, now you got a crime scene and you got a place to start.
And 100 days in, Phil, what's your message? I mean, do we stay hopeful today?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no reason to give up on this, because those are a bunch of hardworking guys down there. And, you know, we have a saying in homicide that, remember, we work for God. And that's to bring peace to the surviving family members. And that's what these guys are going to do. And if, you know, if they start retiring without solving this, they're going to be sitting back thinking, what the hell did I miss? But yeah, keep your fingers crossed, pray for the family, and hope for that break that's coming.
Wow. 100 days, still no sighting of Nancy Guthrie. We don't know where she is or how she is doing, but we believe that we will find her, and we will bring her home, which is what Savannah Guthrie, her daughter, is asking. Our thoughts are with the family tonight, of course, and it's a true crime story. It's about a Today Show host, but it's really a story about a family missing their mom that we can all relate to. So God bless, Godspeed, and love you, America. Love you, Seattle. Love you, Vegas. Love you, Tucson. Tomorrow, David, the singer, he's in court, and we're going to be doing some stuff on that. Have a fairly busy week. Corey Richens is being sentenced on Wednesday. We will have that for you. Stay tuned. Follow me on Twitter at PodcastSTS, on Instagram. It's at Surviving the Survivor for showtimes. And please hit that like and subscribe button on the way out. Love you.